Welcome to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast, the show where history is arrived at through analyzing popular culture. I'm your host, Eric Paul. Today's episode is comprised of two drop-in interviews, separated by a few months and just a few miles, but connected by the topic of trading cards. They are also related because each of the guests were up against the clock when they sat down to talk to me for podcast karaoke. First up is my conversation with comedian Sean Carter. He was appearing at McHugh's Comedy Club in Portsmouth last year and graciously gave me a few minutes before his set to talk about my pop culture menagerie. Take a listen. So I'm at the Roundabout Diner in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, just before McHugh's Comedy Club is about to open up, and I'm here with the headliner. This is Sean Carter, and you're originally from Boston, right?
Yeah, I'm from a Boston suburb, Rockland, Massachusetts. Yeah.
But you're in Tennessee now.
Now I live in East Tennessee, in a little town, Bristol, Tennessee. Yeah.
It seems like Tennessee's the last 10 years has been the place to be.
It's been, a lot of people move in there. A lot of transplants. I'm one of them, but I've met a lot of others too. Yeah.
What is it about Tennessee?
I don't know what it is for everybody else. I know Nashville's a very popular city. Yeah. I'm not anywhere. I'm 4 hours from Nashville. For me, it was family. My wife is originally from Bristol, Tennessee. And due to family reasons, we ended up moving back closer to her family.
Got it. Well, I traveled through Tennessee a couple years ago, and it's a long state east to west.
Oh, yeah.
It's
huge state.
As soon as you get into it, you're it's Tennessee. But then you still have hours to go sometimes before.
Well, there's a fun fact that it's out there. You can find it on the internet. But people always are my cousin lives in Memphis or whatever, which is nowhere near. That's worlds apart.
Right.
So the fun fact is that it's a longer drive from Bristol, Tennessee to Memphis, Tennessee than it is from Bristol, Tennessee to Toronto.
Really?
Canada. Yeah.
Really? That's crazy. It's
it's 9 hours to drive to Memphis from Bristol.
That's wild. Because, when I was staying in, I forget the town we stayed in, but we stayed in a bed and breakfast, and the owners of a bed and breakfast from New Jersey, they weren't, because I was kind of picturing the whole time, real Tennessee, I don't know what the stereotype of a Tennessee person is necessarily, sure. At least having the accent, but... we got New Jersey accent.
There's a lot of transplants there. So. It's really blown up. My wife will tell you, when she lived there before, all the houses in our town didn't exist. The population was probably half of what it is now. It's a small town already, but it was even smaller then.
It's so weird. But I guess that's just the way things tend to go. And so I'm a history teacher by trade, and that's where I came up with what I do for a podcast, where we take pop culture and treat it the same way museum items are treated. And it tells you something about the time and place that it came from. And so you saw from my table, which I always joke to people, looks like a garage sale, is going on. Because I just started doing this about a year ago. And as far as doing the live podcast karaoke thing.
Yeah.
And when I'm setting up, people are like, what is that guy doing? Why does he have just random junk? Why does he have a Tim Allen book?
What's he going to sell me?
Right.
What's going on here?
And then when I approach them about it, they're like, what? So thank you for cooperating.
Yeah, this is great.
You got just like my previous, the person I was here before is a young man who has no connection to Garbage Pail Kids, but you do.
As a kid, I collected Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. 1988 or whatever it was, when I was probably 7 years old back then. Huge.
It was and I was telling him, and he didn't believe me, but I'm we got banned from bringing them to school because they were these are kind of disturbing.
It's a disturbing, it's for kids, but it's disturbing artwork.
But we didn't see it that way. We're this is cool. And it's almost it was a reaction to Cabbage Patch kids or Cabbage Patch dolls. And my wife is actually as you can probably imagine from the stuff that I have, she likes to collect stuff too when we go out. And she actually rescued a Cabbage Patch doll from that same place that I got all this other stuff. And she was looking at these old videos from the 80s of when, I guess, because they're from England originally, and they went all out. They would actually give birth, Mother Cabbage would
birth.
It was almost like aliens, the way it was coming out of, and they have this whole backstory going on. And
And then she found a video from more recently
where,
like, they go even farther. The woman's like, all right, Mother Cabbage is about to, oh, she's dilating by 10. And, like, everybody is, like, standing around taking pictures and stuff. And she's like, all right, we might have to give her, you know, anesthesia. And I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
It's almost, like, cheap. And it's almost creepier than these
they're doing, like, a C-section, like, on a cabbage? I
think they might have, yeah. Wow. Like, I think they went
get
that
the cutting
far.
Board out.
Yeah, just thump. You know, just... Here's the kid, you know, and it, in a way I was like, man, this really cheapens, like, the real miracle of birth. Like,
right.
You know, making it seem like you just grow children out of this.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, back in the 80s, it was kind of kitschy, and the, sure. the English people were like, oh, go to pow to the bottom, you know, and all that. But, yeah, and when I looked at this just a few minutes ago, I'm like, Topps made this. You know, like, Topps was the, you know, it wasn't like some underground...
Oh, yeah.
I thought for sure it was going to come from, you know, some kind of subculture source, but it was Topps was making Garbage Pail Kids.
Huh. That makes sense for why they were so popular, because to get that distributed so widely, you'd have to have a major, you know, card manufacturer behind it. But I'm looking at these now, and this is what I remember from it, is like the back sides of them were just a piece of a puzzle, right? So you had to collect them so that you could put the puzzle together.
Yeah.
And you got, like, this guy, Dry Guy, is, like, dying in the desert right now. I mean, in this one, I always remember Shorn Sean, because that was my name. And he's just shaving his face off.
Yep. And, like, it just put those little images in our heads. And, like, I remember that one in particular creeping me out. But I didn't, like, I felt like I was, like, entering into this edgy world as a little kid. And I was, like.
It was sort of like punk rock when you're, like. A little kid, too young for like punk rock music, but it was like, a little underground feeling sort of thing, kind of satire of the real thing. But yeah, I remember that very well. The big thing for me was Garbage Pail Kids and Muscle Man. If you remember Muscle Man,
those little pink guys.
Yeah,
because did they make like bigger ones that were? Some of my brother had a bunch.
Yeah,
they actually. Coincidentally came in like a little trash can
thing, right?
Like that's how you'd hold them. I feel like he got like the miniature versions, unless they were all really tiny.
I feel like they were pretty small, but they're all like little monster guys. But
I remember one was like a hand. I think that was cool. It had a little face on it.
Those are great. I used to collect those. And man, the 80s were wild.
It was like a youth-centered culture, you know, kind of been carrying on for the last decade, you know, few decades, and I think about it frequently because I'm like, our parents, and I think you and I are pretty much the same age. I was born 81.
Oh yeah, so same.
Like my parents, they're boomers, and they were the first generation to really have like a real childhood, like that. It was being advocated to like. Dote on your kid. Like, don't give them jobs when they're 8 years old. Like, don't, like...
Get them out of the factory.
Right.
Let them play a little stickball.
Right, just a little bit. You know, they're in the suburbs. They're, you know, like, enjoying being a kid and running around. And so, like, they kind of bestowed that down to us.
Right.
Where we got... But at the same time, we had to deal with stranger danger. They did.
Right, yeah.
You know, because...
I mean, they did. They just didn't know about it. So more of them got taken.
Right. And then they're like, oh... We should warn our kids about this.
They learned the lesson in that generation, and then we got to worry about it, which was anxiety-inducing, but also probably safer.
A lot of us were latchkey kids. That was another part of it, too. And I think that's another reason why this is one of those things that probably made people, you know, parents talk to each other late at night and be like, oh, man, like, you know, Sean just came home from the store and he had these weird things. I don't know where he's getting them. And like, you know,
Did you see these like satanic, like, baseball cards? It was probably, but the person that you had on here right before me, he was a child and he was looking at these. He was not familiar with them before spotting them on the table.
He said he was like, he'd seen them before.
Cause he's so young. I was like, how did you,
I'm not surprised because I have a son and he's 8 years old. And so I always have to preface that when I say I go to toy stores, it's not just me. Like I'm not just like wandering the aisles of Walmart by myself, but I recognize when I'm there, I'm like, everything's being repackaged from the way it looked when we were kids.
Right. Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense. Cause like, so I wouldn't be surprised if they've brought these back for the very reason of like, oh, these 40 something dads, you know, are shopping with their kids, but oh, Garbage Pail Kids, I'd prefer you have these over something I can't relate to with
right
at all.
The devil I know or whatever, right?
Right. It's like at least I'm, you know, it's in it. So in some ways, and I've recognized over the time that he's been alive, I'm like, oh yeah, he doesn't know this stuff. Like when he was like 3 or 4, I'm like, oh, of course you know. You know, this pop culture reference, I'm like, and he's like, what? I'm like, no, why would he? Like, he hasn't been exposed to it yet. Yeah. So it's like, I get to, you know, feed him some of my stuff.
Right, yeah, that's fun.
The games that he plays.
Sean had to leave in order to perform the night we talked. But if you want to hear more, go to BlueRidgeComedy.com. That's the site of the comedy club in Tennessee Sean is part owner of, and at which he often acts as host. Check it out. Bryson stopped by my table in Prescott Park this summer, just as Little Shop of Horrors was about to start. Just like Sean, he had to make our chat quick because he was managing the stage that night. They couldn't go on without him. All right, I'm here with a microphone that's acting up. Bryson, who, under the category of small world, we were. You came over to fetch one of the other the actors because you're the stage manager, right?
Yeah.
For the show here at Prescott Park, and we realized that you had taught a acting class school where my son attends, and small world. I mean, that kind of comes in a circle. I don't know how else to put it. It's just kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, things like this happen to me literally all of the time. Because I teach, but I also like, I run the camp here.
Yeah.
I run Camp Encore. I'm the camp director this summer. So between like camper parents and school parents, like there's constantly parents coming
just
up to
running
me
into
like,
each
oh,
other.
Like funny that you're here doing this because I know you from this category or whatever. So it's a very, very small world.
And half of them have podcasts, right? So, you know, you're always on them here and there and everywhere. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes. And that's really all you have, right?
Yeah.
To before the show starts. But it's been a good show season so far, despite the rain outs and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We've had some pretty good crowds. They've been growing, though, as we've been going through the summer.
Yeah, for Sunday night, this looks like a big, pretty big audience.
Yeah, huh? I think our biggest reservation night was last night.
Awesome. So from my pop culture table that you picked tonight, honestly, this isn't the first time we've taught Ninja Turtles, but you picked a Ninja Turtles card. Trading card, and I guess in Turtle Mania, that is just like the tip of the iceberg, wasn't it? It was having a card. I mean, of course, in the 1980s, they had a trading card for Ninja Turtles because, and you see, there's another one. I brought a Dick Tracy movie trading card, too. I have E.T. cards. There's New Kids on the Block cards. There's cards coming out of our ears from that era. My question for you is, why do you think they made them? What was the deal with all these cards?
Honestly, like, because of the appeal, like, I think that they just saw how much trading cards became so important, like, especially, like, I don't know, for me, like, in school, like, that's when we would always trade, like, trading cards. Like, we would come in like, elementary school, and in, like, second grade, like, everybody would bring in, like, their Pokemon cards.
Yep. Still going on. I can attest to that.
Yep. And so everybody would, like, bring in their Pokemon cards and just start, like, trading them. And to the point where my elementary school had to ban Pokemon cards. Same thing with, like, silly bans.
Because some serious deals go down with those, too.
Yeah.
It's not just, like, simple, like, I like that one, you like this one.
Yeah, no. It's all about, like, it's strategic.
So that the image on that one, and it actually, I didn't even intend to bring that one. It was like tucked into a book and it just fell out. So I had it. It's like that's like just a still image from the cartoon, which honestly, each cartoon episode could conceivably produce about 900 cards because that's like a non-image. It's like Usagi Yojimbo, the rabbit, and some guy without any clothes on fighting with a mop. Like, who makes that a card, you know? Like, so what does that tell you that they're willing to make so many cards? There must have been a demand for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
What do you think that really, what does that tell you about the kids? Because I think it's predominantly kids who are collecting them. What must the kids have had in 1989, 1990 that they are willing to spend money on cards like that and have them?
I honestly couldn't even tell you. Like, for me,
How did you get your cards?
It was the appeal of, like, having them because everybody else had them. Yeah. Like, everybody else, you know,
status
had
symbol.
Trading cards that they would bring in. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, I want to be included in that. Like, yeah. I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of, like, this secret club of people who, like, pass cards from person to person. Like, I want to be a part of that. And so that's how I, like, originally. And, like, I played the Pokemon games growing up. So, like, I knew all of the characters. Mm. So that's when, like, I became strategic about it. And it became, like, about collecting one of every single card.
Mm.
So I would trade people knowing the cards that I had and the extras that I had. And try to be strategic about it. But the way that I got into it was just because everybody else was doing it. I guess.
Kind of like, I remember Pogs. Do you remember Pogs?
Yeah.
Is that before your time? Or do you remember those little, like, they're just little circles and people. I got into that at the last minute. Everybody I was into them, like, when I was in seventh grade, I bought a whole bunch of them because they're super cheap. Showed up to school, like, after Christmas one time. I'm like, I got Pogs. Who wants to play? And they're like, oh, we don't do that anymore. I'm like, oh, now I'm stuck with a bunch
just
of weird bottle
ball.
Cap things. But I can attest to this from my son, because he still loves Pokemon cards, that there is a bit of a thrill that comes. It's like playing the lottery when you buy a pack, because you open it up and you're hoping. He even watched a guy on YouTube. That's all the guy's channel was him opening up packages of Pokemon cards, like the unboxing thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But do you think that that played a role in the 80s with the Ninja Turtles and with all the different cards and stuff?
I mean, I think it must have. And I think that it is a little bit of, like, the magic of, like, you know, like, potentially, like, waking up on Christmas morning and you never know what you're going to get. And you unwrap it and you're like, oh, great. Like, this is this one that I really needed to complete this set of this collection. And so I think there's a lot of disappointment that comes when you open a pack and it's all the same cards that you already have. But there's a lot of joy that comes when you, like, get that one that you've really been waiting for and you've spent all this money on.
But then your brain might also even tell you the ones you already have, those are the ones you're willing to trade now.
Right, exactly.
So it just gives you that much more. So there's no wasted money, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that just gives you more, you know, value to trade to your friends unless they have those ones, too.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, I can say, because I was into cards, mainly sports cards at the time, but I did have some of those. I mean, I think there are a lot of easy gifts for parents. They're like, okay, these are like $1.50 for a pack. There you go. You know, stocking stuffer, just, you know, oh, you're good today at the dentist. Here's your card. But it's also like that was hitting a period where cards were just getting way too many to keep up with. That the market, it didn't take long afterwards before the market just bottomed out.
Right.
It was gone. Nobody was buying cards at all for a while. And I think that's why you don't see nearly as many as you used to. They're coming back a little bit, but like when you go to the card section of like Walmart or something, it's basically just Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, I think Magic the Gathering. That's about it.
Right. And you can't find any of the older editions.
Right. They don't make cards. Because like back in the 80s, that was like if you were going to come out with a movie for kids or a TV show or anything, that your Topps is going to make a card series out of it because they know that that sells. But kids aren't really as into it anymore. So
right.
I guess it says something about what kid culture was like of that era, that card trading. So when you, outside of school, how else did you do your card trades? Did you...
We would like make plans to like meet up at school, like after school hours on the playground and just do the trades there. And just like make the plans on the spot at the, or in school, we would make the plans to meet up at like 4:15, like under the slide to do the trade. So we always did it like at school or like at a communal place, which felt very strange. Yeah, that's always
like, it's like
happen.
The grown-up version of it now is like Facebook Marketplace. And you
yeah,
saw something
kind
there.
Of, yeah.
Let's meet in the back of Market Basket, you know, parking lot or
exactly,
something.
Exactly, to do this exchange.
You know, it's like, on the one hand, it's safer, I guess, but it also seems a little bit seamier to like, meet in the middle of like a post office parking lot or something to buy something. But it's like that practice that we got into as kids has grown up with us, and now we're just doing the version of it. And it would be interesting if I was to continue to sell trading cards, you know, on Facebook, because I think a lot of adults are after them now, too. Like, the nostalgia. Like, oh, remember the E.T. cards? Or, you know, I have these Michael Jackson stickers here that I'm pretty sure somebody would want them.
I mean, they're kind of
been through the ringer, but you know, probably made for the exact same reason. They're like, somebody will buy them and put them, slap them onto a, you know, their trapper keeper or you know, what have you. It's all that 80s, 90s kid culture just kind of, you know, persisted.
And everybody finds value in something, you know.
Yeah.
There's always somebody who's going to find the value in any object.
I feel like that card series probably also came just before the era of everything becoming immediately collectible. Mm-hmm. Like, there was even, like, I remember cereal boxes that said, like, collectible series. I'm like, you're telling me that's collectible?
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you if it's collectible if I collect it. But don't tell me that. Like, cards are doing it all the time. Just before it bottomed out, they're like, this is a special edition. Like, how many special editions can you have?
Right, exactly.
You know, like, super collectible. Like, again, I'll tell you when it's collectible if I collect it. But if I don't, then it's just going to end up in the bin somewhere, you know. I'm sure you got to get back, but I appreciate you, Bryson, taking the time. And I'm sure we'll cross paths again.
Absolutely.
As it seems like the way things work. So
absolutely.
Thanks for stopping
by. Thank you so much.
Please rate and follow this podcast wherever you are listening to it right now, and share it with everyone you know. You can follow the Everything is a Primary Source podcast on social media, including YouTube and especially Instagram. Show notes, which expound on each episode, and essays about history and pop culture can be found on Substack. The hub for all these things is everything-history.com. Thank you for listening to the EPS podcast, where everything is a primary source.